Welcome back, friend. I've said before that this year is just not going to slow down. There's no stopping 2020. And the thing that we haven't talked about yet that we need to talk about is President Trump, his taxes, that shit show of a debate, and, you know, COVID, because now the president and the first lady and a whole bunch of other fuckers have COVID. So let's just get into it, shall we?
Hey there, this is Get Legit Law and Shit, and I'm Emily D. Baker, badass lawyer for online business. I've been a licensed attorney for over 15 years, and I'm a former prosecutor. So yeah, I know some shit, and we're going to talk about the legal shit you need to know. But don't worry, this is not another boring business podcast. So let's get started.
All right. I was looking forward to talking about the president's tax returns. Well, no. The New York Times article purporting to report on the president's tax returns, but I'm not 100% sure it's actually the president's tax returns. I was looking forward to just addressing that. And then all this other shit happened. Now we have to talk about all of it. So I'm going to address it. I'm going to link a YouTube video I have also addressing the New York Times article addressing allegedly the president's tax returns, purportedly, I guess is a better word than allegedly here, purportedly addressing the president's tax returns. We have to talk about the debate because there's no way not to talk about the debate in context of talking about the president at this point, or at least there isn't for me because I want to talk about it. Like, I need to process out loud what the fuck that even was. Like, I need to, and I appreciate that you're here for it. Thank you. And then the president got COVID, like right after the debate, and was tweeting about it today as I was getting ready to record this. I'm like, oh God, there's so much with this tweet. And then we've got to talk about the Twitter too. We've got to talk about all. There's so much to talk about. For everyone who has been messaging me saying, Emily, we want some longer episodes, I'm sorry. Your wish has been granted. You put it out into the universe, and now you get what you ask for. Because when we do three topics, it's hard to keep it short. But I'm going to try to keep it reasonable, because if you want more of this content, I am talking about it in other places, including YouTube. And all of that is linked in the show notes and in the like episode descriptions. Or if you are on my text chain at this point, if we're texting friends, text chain isn't even the right thing. If we're texting friends, you can text me at 615-455-3216. Don't worry about writing it down. It's also in the show notes. Just pull your show notes up in your podcast app and you'll see it. And then you'll get links to all of this stuff as it happens and when it breaks. And you'll stay in the loop the fastest. If texting is not for you, I totally get it. The Get Legit Facebook community is where to have that conversation, because I also post this stuff in there, and I'm in there more than I'm anywhere else on Facebook, for sure, to have these conversations in a curated space by me between us. You can get there at getlegitlive.com. You can search Get Legit on Facebook, and that will get you into the Get Legit Crew Facebook community where we can talk and I can keep you up to date with all the things. So let's talk about all the things, right? First, we're going to go back in time, you know, to when it seemed like the craziest thing we were going to talk about was this New York Times article about Trump's tax returns. You know, before the debate happened, back when we were less scathed and less cynical than we are now. The reason I have said allegedly and purportedly is because the New York Times has not released the source information for the tax information from the president that they have interpreted and distilled into an article about the president. The thing I find the most troubling in all of this is the headlines are wild and staggering and not all closely connected to what the New York Times has reported. The New York Times says that they got information related to the president's tax returns. they did not specifically say they had all the tax returns. So I don't know if they have his tax returns, if they have tax return summaries. They did make clear that they got and obtained this information legally, or they got it from somebody who had obtained it legally. However, it is illegal to disclose somebody's tax records. So the person who distributed it to the New York Times probably did so illegally, but that doesn't mean that the New York Times then reporting on it is illegal if they obtained it from someone who willfully gave it to them. They didn't go steal it themselves. That doesn't mean that the person who gave it to the New York Times didn't break the law. It just means that the New York Times is kind of off the hook for reporting on it if they themselves didn't do anything illegal to get it. If that shit just shows up, they're like, okay, we can talk about it. The New York Times also has an article about the last time parts of Trump's tax returns leaked and where the journalistic protections in the First Amendment were with regard to stories like this if the publication itself didn't do anything illegal to obtain the documents. So what they didn't make clear is exactly what information they were relying on, but assuming that they have the tax returns, we are still looking at information filtered through others and information that hasn't been examined by anyone other than the reporting party. We don't know if this was examined by CPAs. No one made that clear that they had a forensic accountant or CPAs go through this to break it down. So there are things that this article left me with questions on, and I don't think all of it's as damning as some of the headlines want it to be. The attorney for the Trump Organization, and we now know that the Trump Organization, according to the New York Times, is over 500 different business entities. That attorney has said that this was widely misreported and that a lot of what was being reported was untrue, though I've seen the criticism online that if it's untrue, go ahead and just release all of the documents. Look, it would be so much. It would be so much tax shit if we're talking about 500 different entities plus all of the Trump family members. It's a lot. What the New York Times illuminated was that the Trump Organization, the 500 different business entities of the Trump Organization, very widely make use of every provision of the tax code that is beneficial to them. However, I don't find that to be very damning because that's what businesses do. I think that the information illuminates the tax code has become kind of unwieldy, in my opinion. Even when I studied tax in law school and I worked in the U.S. Attorney's office in their tax division for a summer during law school, I loved it because I am a nerd. But even then, the tax code was massive and had quite a lot of very quirky little provisions within it. A lot of those got there by way of like pork, not like actual meat product pork, but like political pork tacked on to other types of spending bills and other types of bills in Congress, because Congress uses the tax code to like dole out favors and preferences and for behavior control in my opinion, but it's also just the way that it is. When you see things like, hey, we're going to add a deduction for this type of car and this type of weight for this type of business, it's because SUV sales have gone down and the automobile industry has lobbied Congress to make it easier for businesses to buy a Porsche Cayenne and deduct the damn thing. That is behavioral control. Like, if you buy this thing we want you to buy, then we'll give you this benefit that you really want and we'll make it easier for you to buy. Look, I did the exact same thing. I deducted crap tons of money when I bought an electric vehicle, a fully electric vehicle. I looked into the federal tax breaks I was going to get, the state tax breaks I was going to get, the breaks on my electric bill. And I was like, hey, I want this badass car that I fucking love because it's amazing and smart and sexy. And I love my car so much. And it has a whoopee cushion and video game. Like, my car is like my little like 13-year-old brain just explodes, because in my head, there are definitely times where I am a 13-year-old boy and I will still laugh at fart jokes. I like to play video games. And my car meets all of the nerdiness that is me. But I also got all these tax breaks, and so did my business. And I love that. And businesses are set up to win in the U.S. I don't think this is a secret to anyone. I feel like if you're just discovering this now, maybe you haven't looked very hard into that. But businesses are set up to win. The tax code is set up for business owners to win, not for W-2 employees to win. Y'all are supposed to keep working as a W-2 employee because y'all have to keep working. Businesses are set up so that when they pay taxes, the money that they spend comes out first. So business expenses first, then deductions, then what you pay in tax. When you get a paycheck, all that shit comes out first, then you get paid, and then you pay your expenses. So if you are working a W-2 job, all of the taxes come out, then you get some money, and then you have to pay all your expenses with the money that has already had taxes taken out. Those are after-tax dollars. When you are a business, you get your money, you pay for the shit you need to pay for, then you get deductions, then the taxes come out. Those are pre-tax dollars. They go further because money hasn't come out of them yet. So dollar for dollar, pre-tax dollars go further than post-tax dollars. That is how businesses can win. That is why I do a lot of consulting for businesses to help them figure out how to win with their business. You can have a small business and take advantage of some of the things that Trump took advantage of. And his organizations were taking advantage of this well before he came president. One of the biggest controversies in all of this was from an Obama administration look-back provision that allowed Trump to go back and take back the millions, tens of millions he had paid in taxes. He was able to offset business losses by clawing back essentially taxes that had been paid in past years because it was part of a recession recovery plan. Like, oh, let's let these businesses take back the money they paid in taxes from these past years based on their losses now. That's just what was allowed. Some people are like, Trump didn't pay anything in taxes. Well, as such, his tax returns aren't going to pay a lot. That doesn't mean the organization doesn't still pay all the payroll taxes and all of the taxes that go into having employees in 500 different organizations, but the organizations themselves, then they pay $750 in taxes a year. A lot of organizations of this size pay nothing. And the more useful conversation, I think, is do we agree that the American tax code should be set up for businesses to win? Do individuals want to learn how that game is played, become business owners, and play that game too? Or is that too risky? And we want the tax code to be more evenly applied across the board. Those are the more helpful conversations, I think, than, oh my God, the president didn't pay any taxes. It's 500 different business entities. No, they probably didn't pay taxes because they were offsetting gains and losses. And that's not scandalous. That's just the way that the tax code's written. And I don't have a problem with that. I'm not defending the president by any means, but I am defending businesses using the tax code this way. That's the way it's written. If you don't like the way it's written, I completely understand that. Vote for different people in Congress that aren't going to use the tax code like their personal favor giver outer. That was super articulate, Emily. Wow. Personal favor giver outer. But that's where all these wonky little provisions of the tax code come from. Some of them are stimuluses like we've had with COVID. And I've talked about the different stimulus provisions that are essentially tax provisions, allowing individuals to get money that's offsetting future tax credits. So some of these provisions were exactly that. They were stimulus monies allowing the Trump organization to go back and reclaim monies they had already paid in taxes, because there was a year where Trump paid almost $100 million in taxes, but then was able to get it back through that bill. So that's what was interesting in this article. It did walk through things very well. One of the questions it left me with, and I need more information, for sure, is what kind of potential conflicts the president has based on his overseas investments, and even based on the types of things that the Trump Organization owns in the U.S. I think that having more clarity around those matters, obviously it's not going to change. The people who hate Trump hate Trump. The people who love Trump love Trump. The rest of us in the middle who are just curious and would like to understand how business interplays with politics in this context, I would like to know more about that without so much spin. I want to see, what are all of the business interests overseas? Do those interests really have loans coming due? Because it's not super clear to me from this article that those loans are due, and it's not that those depreciation tables are ending, and they are different things. So I think there is more here that I have questions about, but nothing that is like, oh my God, it's so shocking that this large corporate organization doesn't pay a lot of taxes. Duh. Nope. That's how that works. I'm not shocked by that at all. And it also doesn't smack to me of being improper, unless you think the whole tax code is improper, which is a different conversation, because then we can't separate the Trump Organization of businesses from Amazon, Apple, Disney, and all of the other large companies in the U.S. that make use of the exact same tax provisions. Any large company of this size exactly should do that. And I tell my business owners, pay the taxes you owe and do not pay more, because that money's better spent going towards your business, employing people, growing your business, because then you're doing, in my opinion, more good. If you're employing more people instead of just paying taxes, you're creating a direct benefit that you're in control of in your business and generally in your community. And now that that community has become more of an online space, what I see is business owners hiring people that they really want to work with and creating more jobs than they would otherwise if they were paying all that money out to taxes first. So it's part of the gamble of owning a business, right? You take on the liability and the expenses. And then the benefit is that you can use things like the tax code to allow you to keep money in your business, to allow you to do things like create jobs. So it's just a different perspective on how tax should work. And I'm very business oriented when it comes to how taxes should work. That's just my kind of view of the whole thing. That's my lens, is very much pro-business. But it doesn't have to be your lens. I just want really for you to understand what's at play here with the president's taxes so that you can understand, oh, I think that's total bullshit. Or, oh, maybe I should start a business too. Do I need an LLC, Emily? Let's talk about some of these tax benefits. So that's my perspective on this, is that nothing in here was shocking. Yes, it left me with some questions I would like to see answered. Does it matter, really? No. Not unless it pushes forward the conversation of how the tax code is being used in the U.S. as it relates to Congress, who passes most of the tax provisions. That's where the conversation I find is really useful. And yes, I would like to see some more information about potential conflicts, because that's where I think clarity is necessary, especially when we have politicians that are business owners. Which brings up the conversation of, do we want politicians that are business owners? Do we want politicians that have done shit other than just been politicians? Or do we want people who've just been lifelong politicians and generations-long politicians at this point? So that gets down to what matters to you for your government. Does it matter that somebody has worked and knows what it's like to work? Does it matter that somebody has had wins and losses? Or do you want someone who's like, no, I want someone who knows how to play the game the best they can play the game? When you look at elite athletes and see elite athletes who have never done anything but their sport, like Michael Phelps, Olympics after Olympics, he did his sport and that's it. Is that how we want our politicians to be? Or do we want them to be well-rounded humans that then went in service of serving their state and their constituency? It's just a breakdown on how you think our government should work and how you think it should best serve you. But once you're clear on that, it helps you decide who you want to vote for and whose ideals align with your own. Knowing how you see the tax code and how you see tax being used helps you pick, because generally between the two parties, there are two very different viewpoints on how taxation should work. Though then everybody gets to Congress and passes different kinds of tax benefits to the lobbying groups. But you can let the people you vote for know that you think that's crap or that you want tax breaks for your own industry. But understanding how the game works allows you to make informed decisions about how you think the game should work. Right now, the game is set up with the tax code so that businesses win. That's how that is. I teach the business owners that work with me to play the game. Because at the end of the day, if you want to change the game, you're going to need money to do it. Because it's America. And lobbying is one of the ways you make change. Supporting candidates that you believe in is one of the ways you make change. And making change in the U.S. through elections is not inexpensive. So building a business that can do the good you want to do allows you to be part of that process. But to do that, you need to have a successful business so you can make money so that you can then make the change that you want to see. So that's kind of the breakdown on the president's taxes. I didn't want the New York Times article regarding the president's taxes. I didn't find it shocking. Well, I was a little shook that there were 500 different entities within the Trump organization. I shouldn't have been surprised by that, but I was. I'm not surprised that a lot of the money that Trump's bringing in comes from licensing deals. I've been saying this for the last like 4 years. You guys, licensing deals are a great way to go as you grow a business. And owning your intellectual property allows you to license out shit. And then you don't even have to do anything. You're just like, hey, you can put my name on that. That's cool. So a lot of the income coming in is from licensing deals. A great amount of it was from The Apprentice. So if you're curious about the hundreds of millions Trump made from The Apprentice and money that was lost in different real estate holdings, except when you get to taxes, money lost doesn't necessarily translate to money lost because there are depreciation tables and there are other things that factor into what a loss is for tax purposes versus what a loss is when you're thinking of money going out of your bank account. Those can be different things. So if you are curious, it's linked in the show notes. Go look at that New York Times article. I don't find anything that's like fraudulent or that screams at me like, this is a huge problem. What I see is a very large business organization doing business the way large business organizations do. And if you think that shit's scandalous, elect different people. And if you run a business and you're like, girl, no, I'm cool with the way that this works, then you know, vote for the people that are on the side of giving the tax breaks to businesses. It's so funny. I was at a conference, a media law conference in Los Angeles. Oh, gosh. This one was what I'm thinking of was not too long after the last election. And it was attorneys and heads of different movie studios talking about the Trump tax bill, which was very business friendly, and saying that as movie studio representatives, movie studios as a whole and those that operate them tend to be much more liberal than Trump is for sure, but that the studios all really enjoyed the tax break. So they're like, we're torn because the best thing for our bottom line is this tax bill, but also it's Trump. And you see a lot of business owners echoing that sentiment, which I think the polling, when we get down to the politics of Trump, I think the polling discounts how many business owners are out there going, right, but the tax benefits make it easier for me to do the business I want to do. But also then he gets on Twitter and says shit, and I can't. So it's why I think the polling is off. I think in the years to come, studying the Trump phenomenon will be very, very interesting. It's very weird living through it, but I think looking back and studying kind of the phenomenon of celebrity as it intersects with politics, especially as it intersects with like social change and a global pandemic from which no one is safe. But also of which you shouldn't be afraid of, because the president told us on, you know, October 5th, quote, "I will be leaving the great Walter Reed Medical Center today at 6:30 p.m. feeling really good. Don't be afraid of COVID. Don't let it dominate your life. We have developed under the Trump administration," capitals, because, you know, the Trump administration, "some really great drugs and knowledge. I feel better than I did 20 years ago." So that was the word about the COVID from the president this afternoon, which plays right into me wanting to talk about this debate. And the debate has seemed like a super spreader event. And then the nomination event for potential Supreme Court Justice Barrett, wherein a number, now a larger number of people in attendance have gotten COVID. The, you know, First Lady has COVID, the press secretary, quite a lot of the president's, you know, close advisors and people who attended that have COVID. Some of the organizers of the debate have tested positive for COVID. So it has definitely spread. And I have all of the feelings about this particular tweet, the "don't be afraid of COVID." Look, half of me is like, but like 200,000 people have died and like hundreds of people are still dying daily. So I understand why people are afraid, but I also understand that, yes, people die in car accidents every day and sleep in the bathtub every day. And we don't run around being afraid of that. And that overall, COVID does have a relatively high survivability rate. However, it's not the way I would have said it. I mean, let's just be clear about that. Don't be afraid of COVID is not. I feel like there are better ways to say this is survivable. We need to get the economy rolling. We can't just shut everything down. And I do agree with that. A pandemic's not, you're not going to wait it out. I mean, there's nothing in history to indicate to us that waiting out a pandemic locked in our homes is going to make it go away. So I think don't be afraid of COVID is an irresponsible thing to tweet. I also think the intention behind it is we have to move forward with reasonable precautions and allow people to make their own decisions, which is very much in line with a lot of what some states are doing, which is we have to use reasonable precautions and let people get back to their life. And then we quarantine people who come down with COVID, and we quarantine those who they've come in contact with, and we try to limit the spread as best that we can, but it is still going to spread. We still are in a pandemic, and that's going to happen. However, I feel like maybe the Trump administration could have taken better precautions at the debate. You know, the whole Trump family came in without masks on. Masks were required at the debate. Yes, everyone was tested beforehand, but as we have seen play out, just because you test negative doesn't mean you're not spreading COVID. It means you don't actively test positive for COVID. But we've seen that everyone tested negative at the debate, and they all still have COVID. Well, not all is hyperbole. A lot of them came down with COVID. So wearing a mask at the debate as a sign of respect, at least when you're walking in and out, the same way we wear a mask walking in and out of a restaurant in most states, and then sit down and take your mask off and eat, is just not only a respectful way to be around others, but also it is the rules in most places. And I, if anything, am following the rules. Questioning the rules at this point is not really what I'm here to do. It's so hard with the mask thing, right? Because there are those that are like, look, take reasonable precautions, be an adult, and don't go out if you're sick. Okay, I get that, but people don't know that they're sick. So then what? If you don't know that you are sick and so you are going out, what do you do if, you know, you end up spreading COVID to everyone in the West Wing? Then what? And that's where we're at. So I think this tweet is problematic. I think the intention behind it is we have to not shut this economy down, and we have to live our lives with precautions and make sure that we are doing the responsible thing so that we can keep moving forward in the middle of a pandemic. I think others are like, no, we should lock everything down and everyone should stay in their homes. I think the doctors are still split on this. I mean, we don't lock down the entire country for flu season, but I think some of the precautions that have come with COVID will be helpful in future flu seasons. I do. The increased hand washing, the increased awareness of hand washing, the use of masks, especially if people are sneezing or what have you. Is not. I would love it if everyone had a mask on when they weren't feeling well on like public transportation and airplanes. I don't want you sitting next to me coughing. I also don't know when I want to be on an airplane again. I got to be perfectly honest. Shit makes me nervous. So I understand that the president is trying to not have people panic. That's what he told Bob Woodward. Bob Woodward was like, you're downplaying this. The president's like, we can't have mass panic. We saw what happened when people started to freak out about toilet paper. I get that on a global scale, you can't have everybody panicking. I think a reasonable amount of caution is the chord that needs to be struck here. And I'm not seeing a reasonable amount of caution being struck anywhere. It is a, you know, along the lines of just don't be a dick to your fellow humans. Be respectful in your space. And there are still quite a lot of people in this country that are quarantining and limiting social contact. And so when you see an event like the Judge Barrett nomination ceremony with so many people in one spot without masks, you're just like, come on, man. People have canceled weddings, can't have funerals, haven't had graduations. Just be respectful of the fact that people have given up so much in their lives, and then you're going to have this massive gathering in the Rose Garden. That's the thing that kind of chafes me the most, is that with everything, keep the same energy. Keep the same energy. And I understand that the Trump side of this debate would be like, well, we didn't decide to cancel all those things. That's governor by governor. Right, but you're the president. And a lot of people have been going through this. So maybe just not with the large events that everyone else has canceled or should have canceled or was told that they should cancel. Maybe that. That's where I'm at with this. But what we know is that the president doesn't really care how he's perceived, or at least I must assume that he doesn't care how he's perceived based on that debate. Holy shit, you guys. Holy shit with that debate. Did you watch it? If you watched it, I would love to hear your thoughts in the Facebook community. I would love to hear your thoughts because it was really like watching kids argue on a Zoom call. It was just the interruptions and the nonsense. I mean, I really actually wanted to hear some of Biden's answers. And though a lot of what Biden says just sounds like political drivel to me, I really wanted to hear some of his answers to the policy questions. And he was interrupted so much, I couldn't get a sense of what he was trying to say or what his policy positions were. Though I generally know, I wanted to hear the answers. It's the point of a debate. Show up and explain to me what your plan is. And I couldn't hear it because the president kept interrupting. I could tell he felt like he was on the defensive. I also thought that the moderator looked exhausted and started getting very snappy with the president because the president kept interrupting. I don't think Chris Wallace was ready for that level of interruption. And I don't think he knew how to rein in the president at all. I don't think just letting them argue with each other would have been helpful either. I don't know how you save that dumpster fire. It was just really uncomfortable to watch. I thought it was unprofessional. And I've seen the narratives on both sides of this, and those who love President Trump are like, yeah. And those who hate President Trump are like, fuck you. And it didn't change anyone's opinion for sure. I think there are probably some who were on the fence who have been swayed more heavily one way or the other, but I think that that's few. The debates are supposed to give undecided voters information about the policy so that they can vote for the policies that most impact their life and are most dear to their heart. What we got was people who just wanted to scream at each other. And you got, you know, Biden clearly riled and stepping, like breaking a little bit of his perfect politician persona with the calling the president a clown and telling him to shut up. You definitely saw some of that. You saw the president go out swinging and he would not back down. But he was interrupting so much that even when it came down to things like the Proud Boys comment, I had to rewatch that section of the debate 4 or 5 times to break down what the fuck happened there. And because there was so much talking over one another, I'm like, what was actually said? And the only reason I watched the debate is because I was like, look, on both sides, the news headlines are going to be ridiculous after the debate. I want to watch it and see my initial impression and then see how it's reported, because I was curious about that. But the thing itself was so fucking ridiculous that the headlines weren't the most ridiculous part. But when the debate was happening, I was looking at my husband going, that's going to be one of the headlines. That's going to be one of the headlines. That's going to be one of the headlines. That should be a headline and probably won't be. I'm curious about this. Like, these are my unresolved questions. And I don't know if we're even going to have another debate or a vice president debate that's supposed to be on Wednesday this week. I don't know if we will even get to there with the COVID outbreak that's happening right now. And I don't know if I was Kamala Harris, if I would want to debate Pence, depending on how closely in contact he's been with the White House over the last 2 weeks. I would be concerned. I would be concerned after watching the COVID spread from the presidential debate that we're not even clear of. We're not even a full 2 weeks out to see what that is. So we're not even to the end of that yet. I would, you know, the president's going to tweet, COVID's nothing to worry about. No, wait, let me get it exactly right, because I can't get it not right and then complain when other people get it not right. The exact words were, don't be afraid of COVID. Don't let it dominate your life. So maybe the vice president candidates should just not be afraid of COVID, not let it dominate their life, and go do the thing anyway. I don't know. It. Anyway, I had to go back and watch the Proud Boys comment multiple times because I was like, this is not, what is happening with this? And I think most of you probably felt the same way. And because everyone was talking over each other so much, it's really difficult to break down what happened in that transaction. The way that that transaction or that statement got reported was not consistent with what I watched. But again, because there was so much jumping over and interrupting and crosstalk, it took multiple watches, 5 or 6 watches, to break down what happened with the president saying, Proud Boys, you know, stand down, stand by, or stand back, stand by, stand down, stand by. But what happened was Chris Wallace was like, are you denouncing white supremacy? And the president's like, sure. What should have happened from there is the president should have said, I made the KKK a terrorist organization and I denounce white supremacy. Like, that shouldn't have been hard. But then Chris Wallace stepped over him saying, sure, and kept going. And then Biden kept talking. And then Chris Wallace was like, no, do you, and the president's still talking over him going, sure, what do you want me to say? And Chris Wallace is like, do you denounce white supremacy? Do you, and the president's like, well, what do you want me to say? And he's like, I want you to say this. And then Biden's like, denounce it, denounce it, denounce. It was such a cluster. And then the second the president opens his mouth to say something stupid, everyone is quiet. And I got to tell you, I have felt this way because I am normally the loud one in a room where I'm just like, blah, 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 something really inappropriate. And then the whole room goes silent. And that's exactly what happened in that debate. It was like, wah, 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 wah. And then the president's like, okay, fine, Proud Boys, stand back, stand by, or whatever. Stand down. What was the comment? Well, now I need to look up the exact comment because I've gone off on a tangent. And look at that. I got it right. Proud Boys, stand back, stand by, is what the president said. But what was said before that by Biden was, tell the Proud Boys to stand back and or stand down. And Chris Wallace saying the same thing, like, you know, denounce, tell them to stand back, blah, 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 blah. So there was a lot of context around that statement that I didn't see reported, which is part of what's been so problematic in this election cycle to me. I don't think the president should have said anything other than sure, which he said. He should have waited until Chris Wallace was finished with his monologue about it, then said, obviously, yes, I have denounced white supremacy. I continue to denounce white supremacy. I made the KKK a terrorist organization, and then shut the fuck up. But there was so much agitation on both sides and so much talking and clapping over each other that that's when you end up with these moments. And in politics, you can't have those moments because those are the moments that get run with. And that is what we saw. And I would have, if I hadn't watched the debate, I would have been like, holy shit, what happened at the debate that the president is saying this? And I would have gone and sought it out and rewatched it like 17 times. Well, 5 or 6 at least, we know. To figure out and unpack that moment. But in context of the whole debate, I could see it happening because there was so much crosstalk, which is why debates are supposed to have a format so that you don't say shit you don't mean, or you don't say shit that comes out wrong, or you don't say shit that maybe is exactly what you mean, and it's unclear. The point of the debate is that we understand as a voter where you stand, not we see who can sling mud the best or who can talk over each other. I think that whole debate left a bad taste in everybody's mouth. I think it left a lot of us wondering how we ended up in the state of 2020 politics, where this is where our political system has gotten. And it's what I hope this podcast helps with, is helping break down the structures, the law and shit that's at play here, and helping you understand and helping us all have a conversation about the structures that are at play and where we stand with those, where we want those reevaluated, where we stand behind some of those things. Because when I talked about the president taxes, some of y'all are going to be like, yeah, that's how taxes work. I'm happy to play that game. I pay my CPA and that's the game on. Some of you are going to say, that's totally fucked up. I don't want corporations to be the only thing and the most important thing that wins in America. And I want to see that change. Good. Vote. But I think talking about the law and shit that governs our lives helps us get to a place where we can unpack how to move forward. Because right now it feels like everything's just a steaming, flaming dumpster fire. And I don't like that feeling. I don't like the feeling of apprehension. Like on the daily, it's just like, what the fuck is next? And I know that you don't like it either, because those are the conversations we've been having and we'll continue to have. And I will continue to break down the law and shit that governs our lives and call out bullshit where I see it and call people to just keep the same energy. You know, if you're going to be mad that the president didn't take a car to Walter Reed, don't be then mad that he got in a car with the Secret Service to go wave at people. Like, keep the same energy. But also, if you're saying that you're being safe and if you're saying that you're taking reasonable precautions, wear a fucking mask and be safe and take reasonable precautions. You know, same energy. That's it. That's it. It's not hard to not be a hypocrite. It's really not that hard. Boy, this was a long one, you guys. Thank you for hanging with me. Again, you know where to find the Get Legit Crew community on Facebook, getlegitlive.com. And as always, you can text me and we can have these conversations. I'll keep you in the loop when things go live and make sure that you know what's happening as it's happening. We got a long way to go and we're still in the middle of a pandemic. And I think I forgot my sign off last week. So here we go. Raise whatever you're drinking in the car or wherever you're listening to this. I always listen to podcasts in the car. That's why I always say that. Raise a glass of whatever it is and share a toast with me. May your Wi-Fi be strong. May your toilet paper be plentiful. May your family be well. And may the odds be ever in your favor. I'll talk to you next week. Thanks for sticking around for today's episode. For episodes like this and conversations like this, come join us in the Facebook community. The Get Legit community is where we discuss the episodes, where I answer your questions, and we have an opportunity to take a deeper dive in a respectful, conversational environment. The Get Legit community is on Facebook. There's a link down below, or you can go to getlegitlive.com. I'll see you on the inside.